Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America special edition. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am as Michael number two from Robert De Niro's office. You know, Mike Kaplan, how's it going?
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. You can find Sir Michael Ira Kaplan in the New York Post, in the Daily Mail UK, in the Independent UK. I was told by Andy Curtin you're in the papers in Australia. His parents are asking about you. It's you're around the world. You can find Kaplan absolutely everywhere, but because of the, you can find him because of this Robert De Niro trial that's going on right now. The world is calling him Cato Kaplan. He is the house guest for the 2023. In the 90s, we had the O.J. Simpson trial, right? Then next up, we had what I called the white O.J. trial, which was the Johnny Depp trial, where it was all white women cared. Just this was their O.J. trial. And now we have the Robert De Niro trial. These are the celebrity trials. They're rocking the world. They're shaking the foundation of the world as we knew it. And in the middle of all of these trials, what these trials have in common is they're taking a previously unknown person, someone going about their day, minding their own business, living their life, twiddling their thumbs, and rocketing that person to celebrity. And in the 90s, we had Cato Kaelin. In the last one, the Johnny Depp, we had his lawyer lady. And then now we have Michael Ira Kaplan.
All the trials you've ever heard of. There's got to be
all of them. Well, that aren't, you know, that aren't awful. I guess
Trump?
The OJ did involve.
He did double homicide.
Homicide. And then what did the second one? I don't even know what the Johnny Depp one was about.
I still don't know what Johnny Depp did.
$12 million. Graham Chase Robinson, as the world now knows her.
Shout out.
Head of production at Canal Productions.
We'll get to that.
Head of all those things you produced is now suing Robert De Niro for $12 million for harassment and generally being a bad boss. And so, Kaplan, you got thrown on the stand. The witness stand. Was it a week ago at this point or 2 weeks ago?
It was a week ago. I was subpoenaed by Graham Chase's lawyers. They subpoenaed me.
And you served your subpoena like a good American.
Well, they show up at the middle. People don't know how the process works. They show up at 9:30 at night. The doorbell rings and you say, did I order pizza? I forget. Just open the door willy-nilly. And I just look at some messenger guy and I give him the old, what took you so long? And it's like, he just hands me a document. He says, are you Michael Kaplan? Michael Ira Kaplan? I say, yes. You've been
served. No, you say I'm Sir Michael Ira Kaplan.
I'm Sir Michael Ira Kaplan. So I brought that up in court, and the judge made sure to instruct the jury. He said, just so everybody knows, there's nothing uncouth about that. That's a normal time to be served. Everyone's home at 9:30 at night. So yeah.
Wait, 9:30? You said 12:30.
No, 9:30 at night. Like, he showed up at 9:30 at night.
Oh, I thought you said 12:30. I thought it was 12. I thought you just said 12:30.
12:30 anyway, somewhere.
What we're doing today. There is no guest. We're throwing out the format. We're not talking about the world because the world is talking about Kaplan. So we have Kaplan right here. And we says, I'm on tour. I'm in the great state of Oregon. I've been all around this great country the past few weeks. I have friends around the world. La-ti-da. I'm a global.
You're a globalist.
I'm a globetrotter.
I wanted to get into the. I was going to say, let's get into the Argentinian election. But you
just
said
a
no.
Second. We are not. Yeah, Kaplan sent me last night. Should we do the Argentinian election? Chile has a new vice mayor. I says no. We're talking about you idiot. And so we've been talking about this on our Patreon show. Everybody, I implore you, patreon.com/lostinamerica. If you want to get into the weeds, the nitty gritty, the behind the scenes, go there. But
yeah,
there's so much to talk about. We said, why not give the people just
a
glimpse
picture
into the world of what it's like to be Cato Kaplan right now, the center of celebrity. And then if you want more of this, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. $5. That's all it takes. Are you listening? New York Post? Are you listening? Yeah. Daily Mail? If you want real quotes, spend $5, you dumb journalist.
I know. What I'm very, $5. I get the whole story. That's all I need to pay.
What kind of journalists are these who would not? Because who's even been on the witness stand outside of immediate family? It's been you and one other person from the.
There's been
the
a few
office,
others. But. Yeah, a few others. Yeah, yeah. She, I mean, she called made, up. They haven't made the papers as much. No, you know,
no,
the papers are
the
all about
page.
Kaplan. Yeah, yes. I was literally on the front page of the New York Post, right under like some story about Hamas. It was a dream come true.
It was you. And so people have been asking me about this. So I want to, is the best point. So what we're going to give you a taste. So should we start with the questions I've been getting and go from there?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to start. Do you know about it? Let's answer the
first
question
that
people have.
And this is overriding. I mean, everyone has been asking this question because in the New York Post, it's a picture of you coming out of the downtown courthouse in Manhattan,
downtown,
as you would say.
And right next to the Trump trial, right next to where Sam Bankman-Fried was being sentenced. That's where it was, the hub of all the activity.
And that's a great way to put it because you're wearing quite possibly the dumbest jacket anyone's ever seen. And it looks like a Sam Bankman-Fried jacket. It's almost something he would wear. It's very schlubby. It's like it's like you had no idea you were going to trial. You're walking down the street on your way to Dunkin' Donuts and they pulled you aside. They go, you're on trial now. Or you're not on trial. You're on the witness stand now. And then you just ran in there. So the world wants to know, why on earth did you pick this gray tie-dye jacket?
Well,
to wear
first off,
to what might be the most important day in terms of celebrity of your up until now of your life.
Yeah, well, let's back up a second. I was I spoke to Bob's lawyers, Denier's lawyers briefly, just to get an idea of like what's going to happen. You know, what do I expect? I said, what am I supposed to do? Do I have to show up? They said, you do. Just answer the questions, be truthful. And they said, hey, one of them said, hey, Kaplan, do me a favor. I know you're going to wear some dumb t-shirt. But you got to wear, put on a suit and tie, look respectable. So I said, oh, yes. Jesus, someone died today. I was going to wear my Lost in America number one in Armenia shirt. I was going to plug.
Of course you were.
But so instead I put on a suit.
Tennis shoes, but, jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Get comfortable. But I put on a suit.
I said this on our Patreon show, but that doesn't surprise me because at my brother's, Tyler Sparks' wedding in 2005, whenever that was, and at my wedding in 2016, my dad was like on repeat. He goes, there's hundreds of people coming to both these weddings. Make sure Kaplan does not wear a dumb t-shirt. Tell him he has to wear a suit and tie. He didn't single out a single other person at one of these.
Nobody
so
knew.
It's good to know that Gary Sparks, a CPA in Sacramento, California, who's never met Robert De Niro's lawyers, and Robert De Niro's lawyers have the exact same impression of you.
They're on the same page.
The world does. Everyone said, why is Kaplan? Why is he such a schlub? Why does he look like that? What's going on? So what is going on? You tell me.
So yeah. So then I put on a suit and it's like, you know, there's like in between temperatures when it's like seems too cold to just go out. Like a suit jacket is not quite warm enough if it's chilly out. Like, I don't know. So you got to get the like overcoat, the big like.
You mean a suit jacket, like a sport coat you're talking about?
A sports coat. Yeah. So you know, you can't just wear like a jacket over that because a jacket, then it comes too short, you know, it's leaving stuff on the sides. You look stupid. So I said, I need a long coat. I go to get my long coat. It's been a while since I've worn it. And I can't get the sleeve in. Like, I don't have anybody there. I need an assistant. I can't get the sleeve in. I'm falling over the place.
I almost took
pancakes the dog out, kicking my arm in.
You need an assistant.
I need someone to hold the coat up for me.
Have you considered hiring Graham Chase Robinson?
She's available.
I've heard she needs a job.
She interviewed for 638 jobs, I saw, but she didn't get any of them yet. So maybe it comes cheap. But Yeah, that is woman's work, though, so I don't know if I should do that. But
so you have $300,000 lying around to pay.
Yes,
started
inflate, and that's prices have gone up since then. So I put on this long coat, thinking it's at least going to cover me. It's cool. I'll look kind of like
you're talking about this gray jacket, this
a rock star who had to go to court for like a divorce hearing or like a custody battle or something.
No, it's a Sam Bankman Fried jacket.
Well, there you go, Sam Bankman. And you know, I saw Sam Bankman Fried. Think you bring me up? Somebody posted his photo. His the court stenographer. What do you call that person?
Yeah,
they released his photo, and it looks like a different person. It's like thin. He looks like a cool guy. So I'd love to. I haven't seen my photo. I want to get a hold of it. I wonder if I'd love to use this as my Christmas card this year. The photo they
he's
draw
been on
you.
A prison diet. Hasn't he been in prison for the last 6 months?
So you're saying that mine won't look as good. I thought maybe they just do that as a favor for you if you tip them or something. But
and when you say anyway. Stenographer, you mean the person the who drew the picture? He looks good in the painting.
Yeah,
stenographer is the one who takes the notes.
Oh no, not that. The person who does the drawing, the sketch artist.
They're
that they
called
still have for
artists. They're called an artist. You've right, well, been in court the last 2 weeks.
I don't know where the artist was. I got to get a hold of it. That's something to do.
Oh, can we get your drawing?
That's what I'm saying. It'd be so great to get it. It'd be like a t-shirt.
Wait a second. Next time, because am I allowed to say this on the air? What might happen in the future, or should I not say?
I don't know what I'm allowed to say.
Well, with you, what might go on next week as in relation to this trial?
Oh, then I might testify again?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna. It doesn't look like likely, but there was a chance I was gonna come back. I'm staying in
Here's
the bullpen.
Saying,
I told the lawyers, I said, I'm in the bullpen, I'm getting loose. Call me in, play my music, I'll come back if you want me to.
You're warming up your arm. Play
I'm
wild.
I'm staying
thing.
Loose, yeah.
Rick Vaughn's coming back. So Kaplan, no, here's what I'm saying though. If you go back to trial and then Bob's lawyers again are gonna say, Kaplan, wear a suit and leave that dumb gray parka, whatever, rain jacket. It looks like you know what it looks like? It looks like a poncho. It's like one step above just flipping upside down a Glad bag, like a black trash bag, and putting it on your head at a Cleveland Browns game.
Can I tell you, it really fooled everybody because I came out of the courthouse and there was like two paparazzi and one's like points the other guy, like there's the guy, and the other guy like shook him off, like that can't be anybody. So like he had me all to himself. He came over and I stopped. I was so excited. I start waving to him. I'm like, I miss you guys. I used to protect him from you guys. Good to see you. And they're like, they didn't even run those photos. They ran the on the stair serious photo, like when I wasn't looking.
So you did like the TMZ stop and chat with the, with the paparazzi.
I was holding
like,
a convening
guys,
an audience.
Hey guys, how's it going? Yeah.
What's up?
No, here's the good point, work. Though. Here's what you do. Is we got to get a hold of your drawing from you on trial. I mean, on whatever, you're on the stand. And then we print t-shirts. That's the new Lost in America t-shirt, first of all. And second of all, that shirt you now wear when you go, if you go back on the stand, you wear a t-shirt of you on the stand.
That would be could swing the whole
and when
case.
Bob's lawyers go, Kaplan, you have to wear a suit and tie. You go, yeah, I'll wear a suit and tie. Yeah. But then by the time you get there, it's too late. You know, you don't bring one. You
and also, like my understanding of the whole thing, people have told me after the fact because I said on our Patreon show, I said the best part about it was I killed with the jury. They seemed to really like me. Bob's lawyers said they fucking loved you. They were laughing, and somebody told me that's the whole thing. Somebody who's not who wasn't there, but who's a lawyer told me like, that's the whole point. They want people, the jury is so bored. They're bored out of their minds. If they get someone they actually like, they're going to just listen to you. So I don't know why I should wear a suit and tie. Nobody likes a suit. I should be a fun guy. I should show up in a fun t-shirt. That's how you win a jury.
A t-shirt of yourself on the stand from a week earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So that's the best idea ever. Honestly.
Yeah, that's really great. That's really great.
Okay. So we're going to go through some questions. But before we do, I just want to say after the break, so what's happening is I'll just run through real quick. So Graham is Chase Robinson, sued Robert De Niro for $12 million for she was an assistant to De Niro in an office with you and a rotating cast of two other assistants. You were there about 15 years, she was there about 11 years. Mm-hmm. And these other people come and go. And she's suing De Niro for essentially harassment and being a mean boss for 12 mil. And so then she called you to the stand last week as I guess the idea that you might agree. You go, yeah, he was the worst. Turns out, from what I can read, and you could correct me from, you kind of didn't agree on the stand. You went, no, 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 I liked Robert De Niro, but you, Graham Chase Robinson, were the one that was harassing people.
And I did it. I pointed at her. I said, the real harasser's in this room. No,
in this
it's right
room.
Over there. It's right over there. You're like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, some of the stuff in the paper out of context can sound bad, but no, I was just going to say,
no,
like,
I just want to say before we go on, Kat, before we go on, that we're coming up. We'll take a break a little while for an ad. After the break, we're going to have an expert witness. We're doing our own trial right in here.
It's like a trial right here.
As part of it, Robert De Niro said that Graham Chase Robinson stole 5 million airline miles from him and flew around the world. And then I believe, was it her testimony or yours or someone else's that said she only flew Delta because
that was my
she
testimony.
That was you?
That was me, yep.
Okay, so Kaplan said she only flew first class and she only flew Delta. And when she would fly American Airlines, she would complain that American Airlines first class is basically like flying coach. Right.
Yeah, so really, Delta, that's her new job. She should be a spokesperson for Delta. They should hire her.
Well, it just so happens, I'm in Oregon on tour right now between shows for a few days. So I ran over to my cousin Terry's house, and she lives deep in the woods of Oregon. But she's recently retired from, I want to say, 30 years working for Delta. And part
Damn,
of her job
look at that.
At Delta was to go after people who had stolen Delta miles from the original owner and prosecute those people on behalf of Delta. And she says Graham Chase Robinson should be in prison. And cousin Terry, after the break, is coming on to explain this all to you, Kaplan, and to the world, and to whatever lawyers might be out there listening right now that would want to add this in. Now let's keep going. So that's just a tease. She'll be coming up soon. Cap.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, and I'm excited to talk to her about this, you know, like Chase's big claim about how what a, you know, terrible boss he was. And, you know, there's working for a person like Robert De Niro can be difficult, right? Like, he can be demanding. He can have expectations. But she is the absolute worst person to, you know, to, this is the number one thing that's driving everyone who knows this case well nuts. Is like, she's the worst, like, spokesperson to try to bring a claim about anybody, because every single person who worked there, their big problem wasn't Robert De Niro. The big problem was they worked for Chase Robinson. Like, she was a total, like, monster. Like, so that's,
so she was, you know, the cog between everyone and De Niro. You kind of couldn't get through to him because she was blocking the way. And she, on his behalf, she was ruined. Not on his behalf. She thought she was doing it on his behalf, but it was really on her behalf. She was ruining people's days.
She was like controlling. She just wanted to have all of the oxygen in the room, you know, all of his attention,
yes.
She wanted to get all, I used to call it the dog biscuit thing, where like she would like follow him and like ask for, you know, tell him every single thing that he could be happy that she did. And he'd be like, oh, good, 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 good. And then she'd be getting like a biscuit. Like, she'd be so happy. She'd live off this. So she didn't want anyone else to have this access. She had all the access, and she tormented everybody else. Basically, she just made them cry.
She used that and hoarded that over everyone else.
Yes. Yes. And she made, yes. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of screaming, a lot of slam doors, as I talked about in the office. I talked about on the stand. There was a lot of, there were people from other buildings, from other offices in our building, who would come over after she would go on a screaming fit to see if everyone was okay. They would tape things, they would say, because in case anything, you know, it was like, they were like, everybody was alarmed that she was like a total psychopath. And there's people with PTSD who like don't go back to the building, who cried. Like, she made panic attacks. She caused all sorts of mayhem over there. So yeah,
well,
that's the goal.
And can we talk about the party that happened or no?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So it's even to the point where you told me that when she, the day she finally, whatever it officially was called, resigned or
she resigned,
left the company, there was a party, almost like one of those, you know, we got him when Obama came out and said, folks, we got him. Like when
it was,
when we've Bin Laden.
It was like when in Times Square, when the sailor just Me Too'd that girl after we won World War II and just started making out with her, you know, and like just grab a girl and start kissing her. That's how people were acting. They were so happy. It was someone else's idea, but I sent out the invite and got it going and invited literally everybody who ever worked there with her and everybody like in the film crew world that she like tormented. And we had like, I don't even know, 15, 20 people showed up. It was like a big celebration. It was the one thing that bonded everybody is their hatred for this other person. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's exactly how it is.
That's her. So I want to go through some questions here. What is it that you, what was your job? Because the newspapers, one of them called you special ops to Robert De Niro.
This is the best part.
One of them called you a handyman. Robert De Niro's handyman. I forget. There's another one. They called you something else. I can't remember. One called you a therapist.
I called myself the armchair therapist to all these, like, because Chase did yell at me sometimes, but we got along a lot better. She treated me differently, actually, a little gender discrimination there, positively. But she
most
was so
of the
mean
other
to these
employees
other,
were women.
Yeah. They were all women. She was so mean to them, and they would, you know, vent to me. And I said on the stand, I said I was their armchair therapist. So, which I think could be a Patreon level. Perhaps I could do that for callers. They want to call in or listeners.
Maybe that's our next show. Is you're the therapist. by the way,
you got a terrible boss
at all. Just self-anointed therapist.
Self-anointed. I listen.
But Cap,
good listener.
And I want to say, and all this is a full disclosure here to all the listeners. For 15 years that I've known you, I've asked you what's your job, and you've never given me a straight answer. You won't pin it down. You go, I make the trains run on time. Hey, I do this. Hey, I do that. And now it's funny because now even the papers don't know what you do. Handyman, the special ops.
I mean, calling me a handyman is worse, is the most journalism malpractice since like the Gaza hospital bombing. Like that was just terrible. They just really, the idea that I'm a handyman is like the idea that someone in Hamas cares about civilians. Like I am the least handy person, you know, anybody knows. So no, I was not Bob's handyman.
So I'm nailing you down once and for all. What was your job? You worked there for 15 years. What was your job? Were you a personal assistant?
I was a personal assistant. I wasn't what you'd call an executive assistant in the sense that I didn't like make.
Did you just say was not?
I was not an executive assistant the way I understand it. That I didn't like answer. I wasn't always on the phones or doing all the scheduling, stuff like that, travel. I did more like, what did I do? I did anything that random came up, you know? So like if Bob thought of something that like wasn't a normal request, he just wanted something, it would be like natural for me to be the person to figure it out. So like, I'll give you one example was that when he had a child, his daughter born in 2012, he had a daughter named Helen, and she's, you know, my son Teddy's age. So I remember the year so well. And when she was a baby, he says to, you know, he wants to get a bike seat for his bike, right? But he doesn't want, like, do you know how they have bike seats? Like, if you've seen, like, those tandem bikes, if you've seen them in, if you've ever looked at a tandem bike in New York City or anywhere else in the world, I think, the child is behind the adult. Like, that's just, like, I think it's a safety thing. I think it's, like, how they're designed in general.
Well, because the adult has to actually steer the bike. So why would the child be in front of the adult?
But when he was younger, when he had kids, when he was much younger, I think before they like realized it was dangerous, they used to make them apparently when they were in the front, and he had one, he remembered it from his children when they were younger. So he wanted one. I spent like so much time trying to find him in Europe. I was like on with dealers. I was trying to figure it out. None of them fit his bike. So next thing you know, it's like, I'm finding a guy to make it for him. And now it's like a project. Now it's like, I'm finding the prototypes and I'm doing like, this is a project going on for 10 years. You know, this is like every time I get a new bike, you need to get a new seat that would fit the bike and become a thing. You know, like, so
in one story, I think we just solved a question that the world's been trying to figure out for 3 weeks. And I've been trying to figure out for 15 years. You were a personal assistant. Is there something wrong with that sentence? That sounds
I was
like
a personal assistant. Yeah, I was a personal assistant. I just meant it was a very specific, I don't know, type of person.
Oh, I thought it's also hard. Here's the other struggle with you, Cap. And I mean, no offense by this, but sometimes it's hard to understand you when you speak. So I thought just a minute ago, you said I wasn't a personal assistant.
But no, I said I wasn't an executive assistant. You know, it's listening to all the keywords.
I was a personal assistant. Okay. So you weren't a personal assistant. Okay. So to all of the New York Post listening right now, to the Independent UK, to the Daily Mail, Kaplan was not a handyman. He was a personal assistant to Robert De Niro.
And I will say this, and this is in key with the testimony of this case. Robert De Niro and I have one thing in common. Neither of us really care about titles. I never cared what people, because I did a lot of stuff. I would give him advice on things that was maybe an assistant would normally do and stuff of that nature. And I would deal with the artwork. I would deal with certain things as fathers. Ooh. But I didn't care about titles. But
the good shepherd should be called.
And this,
the bad shepherd, like that kind of advice.
No, good advice though. No, but Chase cared so much about titles. She was the opposite. So she didn't want to be considered an assistant. That's the irony. That's what the one joy everyone is taking from all of this stuff in the news is that every single article refers to her as his ex-assistant, which must be driving, what drives her insane, because she hated if anybody called her an assistant for many years, she would get furious. She would like flip out on them. Basically, she wanted to be called, she made up this title, director of production. She just bullied him into giving her that title. And then she made up another title called vice president of finance and production.
Yes.
And, that's what, and the you daily, might be wondering.
Yeah. That's what the Daily Mail in the most recent article refers to her as VP.
Right. They say she rose to the ranks from assistant to vice president. And you might say, like, what was the, what were you producing?
What did you produce?
Right.
What movies? What have I heard of? Just name a few I've heard of. TV shows, movies, these kind of things. Because you're the a production company. Canal
the closest
production.
Movies we produced were like slideshows for birthday parties. You know, like a compilation, stuff of that nature. There
is
was
not
no,
a 90s movie or where's what is slideshows for birthday parties?
I mean, what I mean is like his kids' birthday parties or like his 70th birthday party or like something of that nature. Like there's not.
Oh,
there's
you
no
mean
production.
Home video. You guys produce home videos,
home movies. Yes. And I there was
and
no
what kind of
didn't make movies,
home movies. Can I ask how did they open? Like, did we have any number ones or? You know, they opened wide. Were these limited releases? Were they 3,000 theaters across the nation? Because she produced them. VP of
Very
production.
Limited release. Like an audience of one or two people essentially sees all these things. Maybe three, four. And she, we didn't. So Canal Productions is the name of the company. It's just like a vanity company. I think it's the word where like a lot of celebrities get it. It's like an LLC, whatever. It doesn't make movies. It's like not a, it can say, if you want, it could say I work for Canal Productions as a way to being incognito, but it's not a production company. And she knew that, but she just was in like delusional and wanted to pretend that she was important.
So does this mean that I could open like Turner Sparks Productions? There's no law that says we have
to. Do you have, movies? I mean, you're a stand, you're a self-employed. Do you have like an LLC? And you have a company name?
I used to. I ended up closing it. I don't need it right now. You know, you can just be, you can be yourself.
Because you could open up like Turner Productions or whatever. What do you want to call it?
Well, yeah, but the difference is I don't pay out over $500,000 a year to personal assistants, which is what I want to get into next. So if on the surface it says, well, this is a production company, they put out movies. Of course you would have, I'm estimating, but I'm going to put it at $500,000. She paid Graham Chase Robinson was paid $300,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. According to the newspaper. To be the head of production, but we've just been told that didn't mean anything. So basically, to be a personal assistant, $300,000. You were paid $85,000, and according to the newspaper.
According to the papers.
And then other people, a few other people worked there. So is it wrong to assume that it was right around $500,000 a
it
year?
Was, I would say, yeah, it's about $500,000, but you're again, she made $300,000. The other three people combined made, if you're going to say, about $200,000. Is
okay.
Pretty accurate,
no,
actually.
No, no.
So
I'm not
this
saying
is not a very
wrong with you. This is America. We're allowed to make money. My question, and these are this is coming from people again, going with what I've been asked from people. People are blown away that anyone on planet Earth would pay $500,000 a year to people to do things like what just according to the newspaper, get them a martini late at night or. Get their daughter a bicycle seat. It's a lot. Can this?
I mean,
be done
honestly,
for a
the way
amount?
Not to get too into it, but like, so I don't want to speak for other people, but the problem is not the total's crazy, right? If you say 500,000, everybody else's salary.
I'm saying it because it's true.
The other people in the office's salaries, other than Chase. Not even speaking myself. Let's say the other two assistants. Let's leave me out of this. We're always ridiculously underpaid. For what they did and how many hours they worked, but because they were doing all the work and they were doing most of the work, you know, like they were doing such a high percentage of work. They were around, someone's available, like not 24/7, but close to 24/7. Someone's doing, if he's traveling and there's like a plane, there's logistics that he needs someone available at all times or most times. And
if I'm paying someone, if I'm paying out $500,000 a year to assistants, they better also be teaching my kids Chinese. They better be, Like, that's a full, you can get a college education.
But this
for
is
less.
This is why it was so crazy. He's paying 60% of that $500,000 to a person who oversaw the assistants, didn't actually really do very many things. So that's why it was
so. Is that the norm? My question is, and this is the question I've been just getting for people. Again, I'm a conduit here. Is that the going rate for these celebrities? $500,000
no,
a year?
No. I have no idea. I think the average person has like an executive assistant who probably makes anywhere. It depends on like a financial people who have a lot of money probably pay their executive assistants like $250,000 actually, if they've been with them a long time, if they're older. It depends. There's like different types of executive assistants for people who don't know. The people who are more like right out of college, who want to work in whatever industry it is, they're the ones who get taken advantage of salary rise because they're like willing to get it on the resume. They want to work their way up. So you can get them
2 years and then
you can get them for
movie.
A much cheaper and they'll do it for a year or two. Exactly. And then there's the older executive assistant types who are like, that's their career, you know, who like they just work for those are great people, by the way. They'll never talk until they retire, but you get them because they've worked for multiple celebrities or multiple high worth and they have all sorts of stories. And they're the people who they make a good living, though. Those people, they make six figures for sure.
Can I ask this? How does it feel to have the world know your salary? Is that odd?
Because it's a salary from like it was my salary like 4 or 5 years ago. So it's not whatever. It doesn't.
Oh,
mean
so
anything.
That's not even close. So you're making
no.
Double?
And I think I volunteered it because I wanted them to understand because they were trying. I didn't want them to paint like a brush of like, oh, you and Chase were the same. You know, like we're not on the same level at all. That she's saying gender discrimination against because she's saying men made more than her because she's talking about a personal trainer, I believe. And I was saying that my job was closer to hers than anybody else. And I made less than her.
Pause. Let me explain that one. So there's a quote that I wrote down and I believe it's from the trial, but they use it in a lot of these. I just read vulture.com, whatever they are, Vulture, you know, they have this whole thing about basically just taking Chase Graham Robinson's word and saying how horrible Robert De Niro was to work for, but all the quotes are from her. It's like all one source. A lot of them are doing that. And one of her quotes is that men were paid. She was forced to do stereotypical women's work. This is from the Daily Mail. Robinson said she was forced to do stereotypical women's work while getting paid less than male colleagues. Now, let's take that piece by piece. Let's start with the second half. Getting paid less than male colleagues. You've just told me she's getting paid triple. More than triple. Right?
Yeah. Her whole case, in my understanding, is based
male colleagues?
On he has a trainer. Who's worked with him for like 40 years and it's a totally different job. And the guy like, well, it might seem like a lot of money for a personal trainer. He sacrifices his like personal life. Like he goes wherever Bob is in the world. He leaves his family, travels. He doesn't just train. He also runs lines with him. He serves as, he helps him out on set with other things. So it's not the same job at all.
How much did he make?
I don't know. He made more than her. I don't actually know his salary. I'm not going
to. Wow. But
it's ridiculous that she was so, I think I read, you know,
it's
I'm getting the same
job,
news.
As you said. Yeah.
It's a different job. And like her testimony, I feel like she said something in effect where because he has kids, he was told like he has a family to support and she didn't, which is like ridiculous because, you know,
now,
she didn't have a family. It's not because, you know.
Yeah. Just, okay. So now let's get into this. She said she was forced to do stereotypical women's work.
Right.
I don't know. How does that sentence land for you? I mean, it sounds like there was no, Robert De Niro from the outside looking in didn't assign things based off a woman or a man. I mean, you were all assigned to do stuff that an assistant would do. Go get a bike thing.
Somebody might say
that's a woman, you know?
I mean, first of all, he has a man there now in the office who's like more of an executive assistant who does a lot of the same stuff she was doing. So there's that one.
Interesting.
And two, yeah, he doesn't care. Like he just, Bob's the kind of person who's like, you know, and I think this is probably true of a lot of celebrities or people who have been important for a long time. Everybody's sort of an assistant to them. You know, like if whoever's the closest person who he trusts in a room, like if you go somewhere with him and you're the person he knows the best, whether you're a man or a woman or whatever, and he's got to like go on, he's going to hand you his phone to hold or hand you his glasses or can you get me a drink? You know, like it's just, that's how it is when you're A-lister. So the idea.
Well, I would also say take out the A-lister. I mean, that's how I would be if I'm paying out now $900,000 we're up to these assistants.
You've just added, you're doing a running total here.
The personal trainer guy. You told me it was over 300K, so I'm just doing the math myself. So if he's making 400, we're now up to almost $1 million.
I don't know what he's making. He just made more than 300.
You're damn right you're going to go be getting me my, you know, get my martini. I mean, who wouldn't expect that? It's insane. All right.
It's insane. Let's, and also, I just want to point out one thing that's with the chutzpah of her. She was in charge of his entire office. She hired every single person who worked for him, and she was very good at talking him into things like her salary, like her, you know, use the way, basically everything she did, she talked him into in some way. The idea that she couldn't have talked him into a man being an executive assistant in that office if she didn't want to hire a guy is ridiculous. She could have. It's not like, and he would have been fine with it. So her whole case falls apart upon any sort of like introspection, or if that's a word.
Because she was the one in charge of everything.
She was in charge of everything. She hired everybody. Everybody
so
there.
She says, I didn't like the way these people were hired. Well, you hired them.
You hired everybody and you chose how much they were paid.
It's like
when
the president of the United States says, we got to fix government. Everyone's like, yeah.
You're in government. Exactly. We got to drain the swamp. I don't know actually what anyone makes now, but I guarantee that number is way less now because they took out the $300,000 income.
I mean, it better be. Honestly.
Yeah.
If we've learned one thing, you don't need to pay 900 grand to assistants.
Well, the trainer's not an assistant that you're making her case for you. She's saying it is. So anyway.
Oh, whatever. 500, 600.
You know what? When you make millions of dollars a year, it's all different. But yes, you should balance the, you know, when you're doing MSG Turner and you're hiring assistants,
I guarantee I'm not paying out 900 grand. No offense to you. I would hire you for, you know, but that's what I'm saying. Everyone would hire Kaplan. We're getting off track. Point is, Kaplan, we got to take a break. We're part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. When we come back, we'll be with Cousin Terry. But we are part World's Smartest Podcast Network. That is us. That is the Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. That is the Majoring in Everything Podcast with Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy. Listen to us all. Subscribe to everybody. We go on each other's shows. We do these roundtables. We love those people. Follow them. Support them. Listen to their shows. And share our show with your friends, Cap. And now, a word from your local sponsor.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back, and my cousin Terry is here. She worked at Delta Airlines for 21 years, three of those specifically in Sky Miles fraud. There was a different name for it, but basically it was investigating fraud on Sky Miles. And so she's here because, as we said earlier, Graham Chase Robinson, it came out in the papers, was stole 5 million airline miles, according to Robert De Niro. Most of those, Kaplan, you said on the witness stand, came from Delta because she preferred only to fly Delta because it was her favorite airline.
All of them came from Delta. Yeah, that's her airline. Airline of choice. So
I like that.
It's a great airline. Yeah. I had a question, though, because I know Turner mentioned you were a bit of like a miles cop in your heyday. You brought people down for stealing miles.
Yeah.
I want to protect myself. I don't have to plead the fifth or anything, but because many years ago, before those 5 million, she had more miles she transferred that he knew about years ago. And I used to be the person who would help because they were from, it was basically like his American Express card.
Right.
We would transfer them to his Delta account. And she used some of those. So I would have to call up because you had to do it by phone in those days. And like Robert De Niro's not going to call up Amex. So I would just pretend to be Robert De Niro on the phone. I'd be just kind of coughing a lot and doing my, you know, I would just do my low talking Bob impersonation, which was terrible. But like, I didn't know if they even knew it was Robert De Niro. So I didn't know if I was worth doing it. So I would sort of half ass it and then just be really gruff with them. And it always worked, but I don't know. Can I still go to jail or is the statute of limitations okay? Or
I'm sure the statute of limitations is gone.
So,
okay, good.
So the question,
did you check the audio recordings ever?
So Terry and I are sharing a microphone here, so it's going to be a little tight. But the question we had, Terry, is let's see who should answer this question. The idea being, from what I understand, and you can explain it, but if you tell us what happens if you steal someone's airline miles at Delta.
Okay, so you can give miles to anyone you want. Give them. You can, you know, get a ticket from your miles, put somebody else's name on it. That's fine. That's transferring the miles. What you can't do is sell the miles. Like back in the day on USA Today paper, they used to have people in there that would say, I'll buy your miles. That's illegal. Mm. They also, she had to have had a PIN in order to get those miles from his account. So the question is, did he give her a PIN number or did she change?
Right. Well, to explain. Yeah. Well, what she did is there was two things she did. One was she took like the American Express account from his American Express account. She would transfer them to his Delta account.
Right.
And use those to buy tickets directly from his account because we had access to it. She had access to it. And two, she would transfer things from her Amex account to her own Delta account. And I don't know how she did that other than she had access online. I think she just did it online. So that's if you have access to someone's American Express account, that's where the loophole is.
Right.
So, I used to do the former, the transferring it to his Delta account. That's the thing I did before it was online, when you would just call up and be like, I want to transfer 999,000 miles to my Delta account.
Right.
Name is De Niro. Birthday 1943, you know, like all that stuff. But there was no PIN or anything. So I think maybe that's why they stopped doing that. So it is crazy though, because you can, I mean, once you have the mile, if you have access to any freaking flyer account, you can just book flights. There's no, doesn't have to be for the person, right?
So. Right. Yeah. If you have access, but the question is, did he give her access? That's the question.
Yeah, there was that. Well, here's the thing that he gave her access years ago is debatable. I think he did, but he didn't know the scope of it. But the thing that's not debatable that I'm sure came up in trial, I wasn't there for it, but I know, is that she took like 4 million of those miles the last like few months the argument earlier was like, oh, I use these. I can't always book my flights because you make me work so much. So I have to book them in the last second. But these were all flights that were booked after she worked for him. So like there's no argument. And they asked for the miles back and she said, no, I'm keeping them. So I don't know.
So
is
Delta,
there any way you could call Delta and be like, give us those miles, just take them out of her account?
So when we used to find people that sold a ticket, like sold the miles or took miles, we would inhibit the account and we would redeem double the miles that they sold. So in other words, if they sold 150,000 miles to somebody, we would take 300,000 and inhibit the account.
So for 5 million miles,
that's a lot.
So you could give him back his miles?
No, I have nothing to do with it anymore.
No,
Terry's retired. Yeah, so the idea is, am I understanding this correctly? So she stole 5 million miles from him. What Delta would do back then when you were there, we can't say what they would do now, but back then they would cancel her account, like block her account, freeze it. She's account's done. And then would, because it was 5 million, they would give Robert De Niro 10 million miles. Is that what you're saying?
No, it would be up to whatever the attorneys decided that they wanted to do. Cause that's a lot of miles. You know, that is a lot of miles.
That's like, what was that movie with George Clooney, Up in the Air or whatever, where he had like the American, yes. That was American Airlines. But yeah, that's like Gold Club Major if you have that many miles.
And then what would happen? So someone stole 5 million miles. You were telling me yesterday that how much was each mile worth when you were there?
Yeah. When I was there, it was worth 3 cents a mile is how it was credited.
So that's $150,000.
Yeah.
To do the math quick.
Yeah.
So that's yeah.
Yeah.
That's
a real point. If you stole $150,000 from someone, you go to jail. Right. I mean, did anyone
and
ever?
That's where it becomes like.
Did anyone ever, Terry, did anyone ever go to jail because of the miles?
No, they never went to jail, but the attorneys would go after these people and do some type of like we're having them pay back something. You know, but then nobody ever went to jail that I know of. Even the big ones that were really selling them. There was a travel agency. I'm not going to say where it was in Texas, but there was a travel agency that would sell the miles because of the pipeline in Alaska. And all the people up in Alaska didn't have the money to go back and forth. So they would sell the miles.
And so what happened?
Maybe I need to make an example.
Okay, so what they would do is Joe Blow wanted to get a ticket to Alaska because he wanted to work on the pipeline. And he contacted somebody, a friend or whoever it was, and they would sell him the ticket. If we found out about that, we would take the ticket and we would freeze it. And they could not use that ticket, even if they were in transit.
So basically, this should be the end of Graham Chase Robinson gallivanting on Delta Airlines throughout the world.
Yeah, I wonder if she's used them all up yet. I don't know if that's come up yet, or because
5 million.
That feels
like a lot to use
first class flights. If you fly to Europe, it's a few hundred thousand each way. It could be like 400,000 for a round trip, and so that's like 10 flights though to get to 5 million at least. And in LA, you know, the thing is, and this is the lesson out there. It's like very easy to get things if people don't understand what they're giving you. So it's pretty smart on her part. Someone like Robert De Niro has no idea what freaking flyer miles are. He doesn't use them. He doesn't save miles. He doesn't be like, oh, I just earned triple points on that meal. He's not thinking that way. So when you say to him, oh, can I use your miles to get a flight to LA or whatever, to him, it's like, oh, good, good. Instead of paying you, you know, he doesn't do the math that like, I just gave this person, and he didn't authorize the 5 million, but let's just say he did. He would never do the math, be like, oh, I just gave this person $150,000. Like, that wouldn't be how that I could be using.
You know? This is the last question, I think, for Terry. If he did not authorize those 5 million miles, then what does that mean legally?
So if he did not authorize her to take the miles out, the attorney could go after her.
Yes.
Which is probably what they need to do.
Yes.
And he needs to change.
Turner should be the lawyer on this case. And yeah. You should be the expert witness.
Right?
You should be. Terry, what are you going to wear to court? What jacket will you wear? You need to start planning your wardrobe. If we can get you.
I'm not going to wear the jacket that you wore.
I was going to lend it to you. But if we can fly you in and we can get you on a flight, the case is still going on as we speak. Maybe you could be the final witness that puts this case, puts this to rest.
Yes. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
See, are you listening, New York Coast? Are you listening, Independent UK?
They'll get you right off the airport. When you come down the plane, like when the basketball team arrives or something, you'll just get a picture of Terry coming in.
Yeah. And now get in a little Delta car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only request we have is if Cousin Terry's going to fly from Oregon to New York City to testify, we want James Edstrom's to be the paparazzi that follows her off the airplane.
Yes, we'll sell him the story. the official paparazzi of the pod.
Last question for Terry. What do you think? Okay, throw out that this person stole 5 million miles from somebody. What do you think about the idea that all she demanded she would only fly Delta Airlines and that she called American Airlines first class, in quotes, basically coach?
I think that's the smartest thing she ever said.
Do you Delta think we can get best. Can you call? Do you think her settlement is like she could become like a spokesperson and all the advertising money gets paid to Bob until she works off her severance?
There you go.
For the money she stole.
So
she could do an ad campaign, 150 grand. The first 150 grand goes to Bob. There's a settlement. I just figured it out.
All right. The new spokesman for Delta Airlines, Graham Chase Robinson. Cousin Terry, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
We will be right back to close this thing out. All right. We're back. That was Cousin Terry, Cap.
Thank you, Cousin Terry. That was fantastic stuff.
Yeah, and so Graham Chase Robinson potentially belongs in prison. I don't know if De Niro's lawyers are listening to this, but I assume the world is probably listening to this.
Well,
that information what you will.
Yeah, and I will say that they're in court because something just came off the wire. I'm getting the Google alerts, and they dropped an article from the Daily Mail about what's the latest in this case, and they said that a therapist testified today that basically said that Chase has like a narcissist disorder and is like delusions of grandeur, all these things that we all knew that I could have told you that she thought she was like him. She thought she was better than she herself. Like she has all these issues. And I want you, cause you were talking about salaries earlier, you know?
Yes. You were
giving me a hard time. Yeah. And you were giving me a hard time.
I was never giving you a hard time. I said you combined for over 500,000. Is that normal? Was my question I don't know about the celebrity world. Maybe a personal assistant does deserve 500,000. I don't know.
Well, I just don't want to keep going at people's salaries, but I will say this caught my eye. This therapist studied her for 7 hours, like 7 sessions, right?
This is hired by Robert De Niro, this therapist.
Hired by the attorney. How much do you think you pay someone for that? What would you guess if I just told you? Like,
you mean I'm 7 hours of work. I'm Robert De Niro. I'm paying my lawyer to talk with someone for 7 hours.
Paying a therapist to talk to someone for 7 hours. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would pay a lawyer. Lawyers, even the highest end, make like $1,000 an hour, right? So I'm going to say add something to that. High end would be $10,000, but I mean, that's really high end. I would say probably $7,000.
$90,000. $90,000, 90K, 90 whoppers. That is how much a person was paid to tell the world what every single assistant or janitor or driver or anybody who's ever
handyman.
Been in our office, handyman, anybody from CA, the agency, from anybody who's ever dealt with us at all, travel agent, anybody could have told you is that she's a crazy person. And I spent 11 years of my life you talk about armchair therapist. I was her therapist too for 11 years. I had to talk to her. I was trapped in the phone, trapped in coffee shops, trapped everywhere, going over all sorts of things. And I need to set a bill because I undercharged. So I'm trying
First of all, 90 grand. I mean, mind blowing. For 90 grand, I'm going to tell you this. And you can tell me if we have to take this out of the pod, we can take it out of the pod. But if I'm paying someone 90 grand, I'm damn well getting the diagnosis that I paid for. I'll tell you that as
well. No, you can leave that in. I mean, that would be her. That would be a big score for her, I guess, to say that. Yes, because you get what you get for 90 grand. You better get the right result.
You better get the right results. My 90 grand would be contingent upon whatever you come back with. But wait, so my question here is, give me an example. You said you were her therapist as well, because she had this delusions of grandeur. She thought you and her were good friends, right? Even though you secretly didn't like her the entire time.
Well, no. She sort of suspected that no one liked her in a way. She thought she had some people who were friends. At times we were friendly. I'm not saying we weren't. We you know, not friendly, but at times we got along. It was fine.
You got along.
But yeah, we were civilized. Because, you know, ultimately we had a situation where we did different things, you know? So like you were asking me earlier about my job. What did I do as a personal assistant, as you called it? You know, like I would do she didn't like to do the events. Partly because she claimed, you know, that people, his ex-wife didn't like her or whatever. But I think it was really that she was like awkward there. She didn't want to be like she came from money. I don't think she wanted to go to events and be seen as like an assistant at an event with people who could be friends of her mom or people she knew.
When events, mean like the Met Gala or Saturday Night Live party?
Yeah, stuff like that. Anything, like literally anything from Saturday Night Live, today, any like TV appearance to like
Today Show.
These rich. Yeah, you know, like there's that joke David in Annie Letterman. Hall when he says that like all they do is like give out awards in L.A. It's like best fascist dictator, Adolf Hitler. That's what it's like in New York, too. There's always every night there's a function for some charity. Right. And every night they just pick some random famous person that we're going to give you some award they made up just to get you to come, you know, so they can get out. So many times that person was Robert De Niro. Other times he was just there because he's friends with the person who wins or something like that. So he'd be at all these events all the time. I would go with him. I was like the security, but I was also like the
security.
Guy.
Hold the phone. You were security?
Well, like not like I wasn't like bashing people away. Like I wasn't authorized to use like force on people. But
did you have a gun? No,
I did not carry a gun.
But at least you know, as security, you know how to shoot a gun, right?
I can't even wink, as you know. I can't even aim a gun. No, but what I was
what
armed
about,
to
you
do.
You have some type of martial arts training, I would assume, as security for Robert De Niro.
I watched Karate Kid many times as a kid. That was my training. I practiced the Danielson leg up move. You know,
were you genuinely security? Or are you saying that jokingly?
Well, no, unofficial security, more like mental, more like intelligence security. So like what I mean by that is I would get to a place early and figure out.
For 500
out,
grand,
like
this, I'm getting a better security guy than
I essentially ask somebody to where's the secret entrance? Where's the exit? So that I could sneak them in if I wanted
mental
to, sneak
security.
Them out, go through the kitchen, like that scene in Goodfellas when they're walking through the kitchen, they're eating at the club, Coca Cabana or something. So I did stuff like that. And then I would also like get his drinks, you know, like this is in the paper, so I'm not betraying any confidence. This came out once, but he had a very specific martini order for when I was there. And I would go there and make sure they knew how to make it. And I would make it myself.
So you would get there before him, say it's a Saturday Night Live party or something.
Yeah.
And you would, as security, like a normal security, security officer. Did you have a shirt on that said
security? I had a license and a badge. I said, I'm with a beverage and a security.
Are Robert De Niro's friends like you, like making fun of it? Like they're like, you can't hire like a guy at least over 6 foot tall, like a bigger security.
Well,
guy?
he didn't discriminate. You know, that would be a offensive. No, so
sure.
You know, I work.
So then you would, these places at security, yeah. You would go early and you'd go coach the bartender on how to make the martini. Did you ever do that?
I would coach them how to make the martini and make sure they had the right ingredients. They would know, so they'd see me, because you know the big thing is that. You get to a busy party and it's hard to get a drink and you want to get it fast. So they'd be like, they'd see me coming and I wouldn't be, they'd just start making it. A lot of times they wouldn't be serving it to anyone else. And people be like, I want one of those. And I'm like, nope, can't get it.
So that was my follow-up. After a while, did all of these bartenders know who you were? Like, oh, here comes De Niro's guy.
They know who I was to the point where I would show up to places sometimes when he wasn't going. Like if I got invited, like with some, maybe like Mr. Weber or somebody else invited me to like a swanky party somewhere or one of the places
Michael
where he might
Weber,
go.
I'm glad you mentioned his name. Yeah. We'll give his quote in just a minute on this whole thing. But
yeah. So sometimes I would go to a place and they would see me and they would like, they would get nervous. I'd watch the whites go out of their eyes. Cause they'd be like, uh-oh, I don't have the Hendrix gin. I didn't know you're coming. I'm like, no, I'm not coming with him. I'm coming by myself. Don't worry about it. You don't have to worry. You can make me whatever you want to drink, whatever.
Oh, so
I'll
you
drink.
Didn't abuse, cause I would have abused that.
No,
privilege.
I didn't.
Of course. I would have said, well, he's coming in a minute, but in the meantime, give me that martini. And then I'd slug it down.
No. You gotta, I mean, maybe you help to get yourself into places if you had to. But yeah, I, in fact, you know how powerful it was? Literally 3 days ago, I was at some bar in Long Island City and the guy recognized me. He used to work at a place. He's like, I remember you.
What about, like, I have a memory of when I recorded my first album 2019 at the Friars Club. You came in to come in your family and you were bringing everybody to dinner first to the Friars Club. And then you were going to go upstairs and watch the show. And the Friars Club didn't charge you. They gave you and your family an entire free meal because you were De Niro's guy. Do you remember that?
I didn't know that because I wasn't paying. My family was going to pay. So they didn't even tell me. Did they really?
Yes, there was no charge.
Oh, okay. Well,
they told
there
me
you
at
go.
The end, they go, don't worry, Turner. We took care of De Niro's guy. And I'm like,
I'll have to send him a
Kaplan?
Yeah,
you took care of Kaplan? I was like, why'd you do that?
I would go to events because De Niro was a friar and I would go to events at the Friars Club. That's one of the places I went with him.
He was friar.
I mean, he spoke at the roast.
So was I. They didn't take care. My parents had paid that night. I was the one recording the album upstairs. I brought 200 people to the club. My parents had to pay. Dr. Bob and Jan, I guess they were paying for you. Well, you should bring it up with them. They never paid.
Yeah. Well, sorry about that. Next time you're recording, I promise they won't take care of me.
Next time, but the Friars Club's out of business because of people like you. They were giving everything away for free.
I was mooching off my parents. I didn't care if they paid or not.
Wow, they didn't pay. I told the Friars Club, you've made a grave mistake. He can't do anything because he's a man of honor, I said. Mm. This won't influence his... They wanted De Niro to come in more, and they thought if they gave you a free meal, then that... And I said, trust me, it's not going to... That won't do anything.
Not only was I a man of honor, but like, you know, it was always... It's not, what am I going to do? Go up to Bob and be like, can you... You should go to the Friars Club more often. And he'd be
ridiculous.
Listening to me.
It's why they're out of business.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so I was saying what my job was, and then can I explain? Because, you know, we touched on her title of VP of production and finance.
Yeah, she was VP of production for a company that didn't produce anything.
Right. So can I, you know, I said that we did home movies, and that was really speaking of myself, what she did. Okay. Can I give you a few examples of things she did? She made holiday cards. What I mean by that is she made holiday cards and birthday cards. So like, instead of going to like, you know, the store to buy a birthday card like everyone else.
Yes.
She would find a photo and spend like hours looking for a photo of the person whose birthday it is, of them and Bob, right? And then she would have it printed out and she would decorate it like with like little, like if it was like a Christmas card, she put like a Santa hat on Bob and like stuff like that. She would spend hours on each one of these. Like this was a work of art. Okay. This is one thing she did. She did like,
wait, can I pause you there? I have questions. Yeah,
sure.
So each person, so Robert De Niro sending out Christmas cards, like most people do, or whatever, Hanukkah cards. And, but most people, I would make one and then sent everyone gets the same one. Are you saying that each person got an individualized one and it was a picture of them and Robert De Niro together? Like the hundreds of people?
Everybody who was like, you know, like his family members, like anybody close family members, and also for their birthdays.
So this was a big part of the production.
Yeah. Big part of everything. And also like he has calendars, like, you know, like he likes to have calendars. He's a big family guy. So he likes to have calendars with pictures of his family members, you know, in all the rooms he's, you know, like his family, you know, main rooms, gym, you know, like in his homes and all the places.
Okay.
And normal people would be like I, you know, you go through, you like look at photos, you pick October, January, you know, you pick all the months, you find one of each kid, whatever. It's a project. She looked at it like this was a way to show her worth again. She would print up like hundreds of pictures, like every picture taken, because she'd like throw them on the floor of the office, have all the assistants help her with this and be like, get me one of this person, get me one of that person. They'd be there. I'm not exaggerating when there was a time when they were there at like 3 a.m. because I had to have them done the next day. Like she would like, this is the type when you say
and
like,
this is like a calendar. There's websites. You can do these in 10 minutes.
Right. So like you always fear with using his pictures, like sending them out to places, maybe they'll turn up somewhere. But again, yeah, exactly. You could do these very fast.
There's no sending them out. Like the website company is not
physically, they don't know who it
is. They're not physically even looking at it. It's all automated. It's you put it in a web, you put it on the website. It pops up a split second later onto a calendar, like an example of what yours might look like. You click yes, and then it's out.
Yeah. Well, tell that to her. She didn't like to do things that she always liked to do things. This type of, so, like if I was the therapist, she would like to do things the most inefficient way that would take the longest amount of time and make the most inconvenience for everyone.
Because she was making $300,000 a year.
Yeah. Right. But then like to complain about it. Like she works so hard.
Her own worth.
Right. So she would like with Christmas time again, she would spend all night wrapping gifts or she would, you know, she would have these, you know, one of the other things she did was she scouted. She would call it like if you met her, right, and you say, what do you do for Bob, right, she'd go, oh, I have to go location scouting. She would say that to people, right? Like you think like, oh, this is a movie productions, you go scout locations, right?
But there's no production.
No, her, what she said, she would tell people, this is delusions of I'm a location scout, but that meant I would go if it was a place he had never gone before and he wanted to like get a hotel room, you know, like he's gonna stay for a while, a house. She would go look at them. She would say, I'll go look at them. Like the internet didn't exist or like phone pictures don't exist. I will go look at them in person for you. Right.
Wait, are you saying like, if he's like, I want to take my family to Italy. And for example, I mean, say for example, he's never been to Italy. She'll go, I'll go first. And so it's not a location scout for a film. It's literally for a personal vacation.
It would be, combining the two, be it a location scout for like if he was shooting, like not if he was going on vacation in a league, she couldn't get away with that. She never figured that out yet. But like if he had a shoot in like South Carolina,
yes,
and they have all these like fancy homes, like rich people stay in for like you're going to be there for 2 months,
like she an Airbnb, and he wants to rent like a fancy Airbnb,
exactly. And she would stay in like the Four Seasons or whatever the nicest hotel is, and she'd bring an assistant with her, and the whole thing was to get on a power trip because all these people, you're not in New York, not in LA, they treat you like you're Robert De Niro's representative. They treat you like amazing. She would sit in the rooms, order room service, live the life that she would say, like, this is how you travel, like have an assistant with her so she could demean the person, or, you know, I've heard stories where she'd make them like leave the door open when they peed and stuff because she wanted to make sure they weren't like, I don't know, doing something else in it, like I don't know, not like like doing work. Like she was like very controlling.
Are you
like,
listening, New York Post? Are you listening?
Yeah, I had to give that one for the Post. Yeah, I don't even know the reason. So I really start saying that, knowing that I could say the reason. I don't even know what the reason would be, just to control somebody, I guess. So that's what it was. Very controlling and very crazy and very like I want to feel important kind of thing.
But Graham most of Chase it Robinson was like, forced assistants to leave the door open when they peed. There's your headline.
Yes, there's her headline. And she would like, it was like a very like you know the difference, like I'm making jokes, but even when I worked there, like I wouldn't do it on a podcast, but I would joke about the dumb stuff I would do all the time because I was aware I'm a college graduate and I'm doing like this stupid, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, yeah, ridiculous. But if you made
mean
that
picking
joke to
up
her,
a dog or something like that.
Yeah. Or like, oh, here, last example I'll give, because we did this together and we didn't do a lot of projects together, but we went down to Miami once. We needed to like check out an apartment that was that no one was living in. Right. We literally had to go there and like dump the stuff out, throw everything out, go to a storage facility and like get everything out of the storage facility. It was like, didn't need to be a two-person job. And it certainly didn't need to be a job where you went and stayed at like the Nobu Hotel and ate at Nobu and took a car service around. But that's how it was. We were doing it. And we went to dinner with some people, friends of mine. And I just remember making a joke about, we went to the storage facility in like this part of Miami where you would know it's like not the best part of town.
Hialeah?
The storage district. I don't remember. It was like next to a shopping center where it was like you know, you can get like Cuban food really cheap or stuff like that. I don't know. But
okay,
she wouldn't eat there. Maybe. Anyway, but you know, they wouldn't let us in because we weren't on the thing. And I was just making fun of how insane it was that all this money was spent for these two idiots to go down to Miami. And she just was like, what do you mean? Like, she didn't, like, in her mind, this was like very important work. This was like a super important project.
humor in how stupid this all was.
So that was the difference. Like, so all these things, you know, she would say, like, I'm doing, and it was true. Like, Bob did appreciate the holiday cards and all those touches, but it was like she created the expectation, like, I'll do this for you. And now it's like, I did all these things for you kind of thing. You know, it's like, you can't have it. So that was to describe her job in a nutshell.
Hence
a little
the $90,000 diagnosis.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Did you,
I want to,
any questions of yours? Yeah.
A couple last questions. So what about during like how much downtime did you have? Because they said, and I believe this is early on, but it was said through research from people in your office, I guess I'll put it that way, that she had watched all 11 seasons of Friends while on the clock. And you knew that. How did you all know that? Because of it was a password, Netflix password that only she had access to at work or something like that?
No, there was an office Netflix account. So, you know, but we just knew it was her because nobody else was watching these things. So like, you know, I had access to it.
She went home and logged into the account.
She did watch it at home. No. We all knew that, you know, with Netflix has changed things. Now it's hard to do this, but you could be logged in on like 17 devices back then. So this wasn't like costing him any money or anything. It just was like the time of like,
it was a headline.
I would look at this document. I've seen it where like she watched the entire season of Friends in one day. So it's like on all, it's like a psychopath behavior of like,
oh wow. She watched a whole season in one day.
Maybe not one day, but you know what I mean? Or 2 days, but very like insane binging.
It's a good show, but yeah, even that's too much.
But the rest of us would be working. We would be working. And she would say she was working, and I'm sure she did do some work while they were on, because like the phone does ring, there are emails to answer. But like, yeah, you're not, it's not as
were
focused,
you all running, you know, his watching, books as well? Or did he have a whole separate accounting department?
No. Yeah, he's got an accounting team. Yeah.
This personal assistant office
spent money, but
didn't even cover that part.
No, but so that's where the, you know, when I say the VP of production and finance, I think the finance part comes in. So much of this case of why this is so fascinating to everybody who knows the situation is that they're just like, I think Bob said it once in like a text message that they released or something, but it's like the chutzpah. Like, I love that he used the word chutzpah. He's like an honorary Jew. The ultimate chutzpah of all this is that, like, you know, she was the one who was constantly like, everybody else is like stealing from you, out to get you. Everyone else is terrible at their job. I'm going to show you, Bob, why everyone's bad at their job. And she wanted to like control as much of his finances as possible. Like, she wanted to be the one, we pay the bills, not them, or because she was looking out for him. No one else is looking out for him. And so that's why it's amazing. Cause like, if I'm her, like, and this is again, goes back to like, she was so like delusional that she wouldn't see this way, but I would be like, it sucks I lost this job. I made $300,000. I had an amazing run. I have all these miles.
$300,000 a year.
A year. I could take this job. I had a great run. I could relax for a little bit and then use this on the resume to like get another, to trick someone into getting another job, or I could file a lawsuit. You know, like the chutzpah that she's filing a lawsuit and saying like, you know, about all these, you know, it's like she was the one who had all the control. You know, she was the one who had all the control and all the money, and yet she's the one who, of course, was abusing it. So,
but Cap, this
now
is
it's come
what,
out, now it's come out.
This is what grifters do. This is what scam artists do, is they scam you until you figure out the scam, and then they sue you for figuring out the scam. I think that's a very common move from people who have a different reality from the rest of us.
Yeah, you don't. It's like the OJ thing of catching the real killer. Like when you believe,
yes.
Like I 100% believe that she believes a lot of what this nonsense she's saying, because like she was the victim in her mind. She would complain, like with no self-awareness to me, she would complain to me about how hard she worked when like I would have been making a fraction of what she made and might have been doing something else and buried yes. in it. You know, like there was just never any self-awareness. And she, you know, the people in the office who made like a fraction, even a bigger fraction of what she made. And she was so on top of them about their expenses. Like they had to get everything approved by her. And she would complain if she thought they abused any, you know, the slightest bit. It was like, so yeah, it's really an unbelievable look into a psychology of a crazy person.
One or two last questions. Yeah. And this has come is, I guess it's legal. Cause a lot of this trial has come from secretly recorded phone conversations. So I didn't know it was legal to secretly record phone conversations and much less to show them they were permissible in court. But it is, I guess.
Yeah. Right? I mean, my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, so you know, seek legal counsel before recording people. But I do believe it depends on the state. I think in New York, it's a one party consent state. So you can record people.
That's nuts.
Like in California, I believe the other person, you have to tell the person. If it's a two-party state, you have to tell the person you're being recorded. New York, you can record people. I, of course, never would do that. It seems insane. But, as I said in the stand, it seems like a betrayal.
But is it you can record anyone? Or does the fact that it happened on an office phone, does that have to do with it? Like if you and I talk on the phone tomorrow, can Graham somehow be recording us? Graham Chase Robinson? And then all of a sudden
Well, she has to be on the call. You have to... You basically, there's like, you could either use a recorder or there's like an app. The irony is that there was an app I forget the reason we wanted to tape a phone call, because it was like, I think it was like a research thing for a movie. He was like, Bob was like talking to someone.
Yeah.
Oh no, I should have brought this up. He was like talking to someone and he wanted to like hear their like dialect, but it was like, they knew they were being taped. It's just, we wanted to tape a phone call. So I showed him this app once and she probably was there. So anyway, I helped her with that, I guess. But yeah, she taped me.
Oops.
I understand. And she taped a bunch of other people. And it's just fascinating to me that when you're trying to win over a jury, I'm no expert, you know, but the idea that you are taping yourself, you're taping other people without their consent and then using that as evidence when the evidence is like you are. I haven't heard these tapes. I'm just sort of reading, but I think it's like she's complaining about things about the job. That's her evidence. You know, like it's her talking.
Yeah,
to people.
Yeah, yeah. Her evidence is not that I'm mad. Yeah, yeah. It's not. There's no there.
Yeah, because if she taped Bob, I mean, but I promise you, if she taped Bob saying something that was bad for him, that would be all over the papers. And so I haven't seen that in any of the papers.
Her
evidence is
she recorded herself on the phone, and then it's stuff she said. Like, I mean, it's a circular thing.
And it's like if I'm like on the phone call, like nodding in agreement. They didn't ask me about this, but if they did, I'd be like, you don't understand. Talking to Chase was like, it was like a form of torture. Like when you go in and you confess to a crime you didn't do.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure this actually got Bob to agree to things. If he did agree to any of the thing, it's like, you just wanted her to stop talking. She would like get you alone and just not get off the phone or not stop talking about something. You would just nod and be like, okay, yeah, yeah, of course, to get off the phone. So like, you know, that's your evidence.
We're going long here, but in her mind, you guys were friends before this, or at least you were cordial. You were okay. How has she treated you since then? I know you probably don't talk outside of court, but has there been anything in court to speak of? Like, does she look at you a certain way? Has she motioned to you?
No, I mean, it's a little, yeah, that, I mean,
it's gotta be uncomfortable for you, saying this person's a psycho right in front of the person while the person's looking at you.
I will say this, the fact that she taped me and stuff like that, helped me not like she was very bad to a lot of people, but we were friendly. So I did feel bad towards the end of her time. I was kind of like, then I threw a party, but you know, so they brought this up. Well, here's the thing. I know from other people things she said about me when I wasn't around. I know I've heard recordings of her screaming about me, you know, which
oh, really?
Maybe we'll release okay. those. Yeah. She was very nice. Yeah. She was very nice to, you know, my kids. She was nice to me with using Bob's money for gifts and stuff come holiday season, but that was motivated by self-interest. She wanted me to protect her. Scratch your back, I scratch yours kind of thing. I would help her get nice gifts. So
hey, don't bring up back scratching in this trip.
Oh yeah, don't bring up back. No pun intended. But But, you know, I had a phone conversation with her the day I had a heart attack. Like, she was calling me at like 6 a.m. that day, or like, she was like, always, it was like, you know, drove me nuts. Like, she was so invested in this job. So it
gave you a heart attack.
He literally gave me a heart attack. And I will say, the last thing I'll say on that is they brought this up in court. But they, you know, she sent me like an email, like a week after she left, a very nice email of like a walk down memory lane. And, you know, I waited a few days and I replied and I like went like point by point. And I said, you know, nice things about her. And so they brought this up at court as like a gotcha. And it was like, did you not say you're a very hard worker? And you set a great example. Did you not say? And I was like, you know, she sent me a nice email. It was a very nice email. I replied with a very nice email, you know, like any normal human being would do, or because it's the human thing to do. And that's the truth. I lied. Exactly. I lied because
lied
it's like, why
email,
kick some
in the email?
Why kick not someone when they're down? Like literally at that point, she was so, she loved that job. She quit the job, but she did love the job so much. She would get like, you know, she would get like a high off of like when, you know, when Bob was nice to her, when he thought she did a good job, she would be buzzing. She was like super, she loved that job so much. So like, I knew she was down. The idea, when I supposed to be like ignore her or say like, hey, you know, so, I admit. So yeah, anyway, I think the jury liked that. To get back to, we didn't even talk about my testimony. For the analysis of the testimony, you got to go to the Patreon show. That's where I've been doing.
You go. But let me ask the same question again, because you kind of talked around it. How has she been treating you in court when she sees you? Is there anything odd there?
Okay. Well, I only went to court once. I didn't go. I only went the day I testified. I mean, it is open to the public, my understanding. You can just kind of like, it's fascinating. I mean, you could just kind of get in there and just get in the back.
Yeah. You didn't tell any of us. I speak for all the listeners when I say we would have liked to have gotten a heads up. We would have been there.
I mean, I almost was late. I mean, I was late. I almost missed it, you know, cause I couldn't find the court.
Fly in from Portland, Oregon. For this.
I wish you guys were there only because like the whole case has felt like the Seinfeld finale to me, where like all these characters that I've been like for years have been part of this circus are all testifying.
Yes.
So it would be great. And I saw some of them in the audience too. So it'd be great to have had more. But yeah, no, to answer your question, we had a deposition that was on Zoom a while ago. That was like 9 hours. That was much more uncomfortable because she was just like there. She wasn't allowed to talk. I had to talk about her for 9 hours. I tried to put her in speaker mode so I didn't see.
Yeah.
In court, it was actually really easy because it was like, you're off to the side and you've seen, it's just like on TV. That's what a courtroom looks like. And her side's the other way. And I was trying to make eye contact with both her lawyer and the jury. So I really didn't look over her direction very often. When I did, we never really made eye contact. I could have like, honestly, if I had the acting chops, you know, I don't have the acting chops, but if I had them, there was like moments when I don't think of things till late. I'm very like, my whole testimony was like the Seinfeld jerkster episode. I was like, I should have said that. That would have been a great line. But if I would have thought of a couple of there was moments when like, I should have like addressed her, cause it would have really like hammered it home and how ridiculous, like the thing about the, you know, taping phone calls, like that, when they asked me like, have you ever taped a phone call? And would you ever tape Chase on a phone call? And I said, no, that's a huge betrayal of a friendship or something. I should have like,
you said that?
I said that. I'm like, I should have like looked at her when I said that, but I
didn't. Of course.
Yeah. But anyway,
Kaplan, that is it. The last question I've had, this is from a number of people, are you using this now? This is a real question. Are you using this to further your comedy career? Is what multiple people have asked me.
I mean, I've told you this. I think it's a great room. I think all comedians should try to, up and comers should try to testify at some point, because it's very uncomfortable. A lot of the people are stiff. They're not a fun crowd, but the jury wants to laugh. The jury's bored out of their minds. They want you to entertain them. Yeah. So making that jury laugh, I have to be like, this is the performer in me. I was like, I was like really nervous about going in. I was like not excited about it. When it was over, I was bummed. I was like, give me more time, because like I had the jury laughing. I had a captive audience. Should I use it for comedy? I do think, I hope this podcast counts as owning the life rights to this story. I do think there's a movie here or a TV show.
Yes.
I've been toying around with the idea of outlining it of, different. I'm thinking like the character, that one of the newer characters who came in towards the end, I think should almost be like the narrator, because like they just joined this crazy world towards the, when it was about to fall apart. And I'm obviously a character, but so yeah, I do think it could help with the comedy. There's a lot here. Yeah. So, so I don't know. Should I make a one person show about it? Like, just like, instead of,
yeah, it's just a great like, idea. You cry in the middle. I mean, listen, Chase doesn't have a job. Maybe she comes back for the show. Maybe she plays herself. You know, we can Ooh. All, everybody can eat here. You know what
everybody can eat. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of some of the former assistants are actresses. Maybe they could play Chase. Nobody knows them better, including, you know, the person who might have been
who are the actresses?
Some of the people have been tortured. We've got Amelia Brain, who used to work for Canal. She's an actress. Olivia Jampol. These are like, I'm like reading the list of people who have been who are like still have PTSD from all the trauma they took. But so I think they could do great jobs.
One of the Robert De Niro's other former assistants is a man by the name of Michael H. Weber. You yes, might know him. Yes. He went on to write The Disaster Artist. He wrote, adapted it best, and he got nominated for an Oscar. He did 500 Days of Summer. He wrote that film. A number of films. He does have a quote here about Graham Chase Robinson. I don't know, because we were just texting him. I don't know if this is on the record or off, but should I read it?
Just read it. It's like an hour and a half in.
I said, I something to the signs of, do you want to come on and talk about, or no, I said, what would, do you have an opinion on her? And he said, she was a nightmare. That's the full quote. Graham Chase Robinson, she was a nightmare. I think you had asked, do you have any stories you would like to say about her?
That's what I asked. Yeah.
He says, ha ha, no, my memory is shot, but she was a nightmare. So how about that?
Everyone said she was a nightmare, and everybody also said, that she, you know, she spent, and not to go into this, but she spent a lot of time living like places like Spain and London and having this amazing life on Bob's dime. And, you know, so everyone was always upset that it's a little bit of a schadenfreude for a lot of people right now. So not to pick on someone when they're down, but.
And according to Cousin Terry, she should be in prison. That's it, Cap. That's the episode.
Can I just say one thing? It's not on Chase, but just related to what I'm about to go do.
Yes.
Because it's related to Bob. I'm about to head out to last thing I used to do for Bob. You know, I say I do a lot of crazy stuff for Bob. I was once with Bob's driver, his old driver Dave. I used to go to. I went once to like a car auction to sell these old cars for someone in Bob's life who he needed to get. They needed the money fast, so he showed me. So I have a real estate client now that Cap and NYC at real estate who needs to sell a car to get to lower his debt ratio so he can, you know, pay for a mortgage basically. So yeah. I call my guy Dave up. I haven't talked to him in years. You know, that's one of the things that when I worked for Bob, I was the guy who always knew a guy. I call him up. We catch up over Chase. He says, of course I could sell the car for you. We're going to go bring it out. Like literally, like I just talked, like I'm just going to sell it today, hopefully. And so, you know, people, if you need a real estate agent who just knows people and can entertain you with stories of Chase Robinson and Bob De Niro.
Yes.
Cap in NYC. Come find me.
On Instagram, Cap in NYC. Yes. That's it, Kaplan. What should we do?
Chase Robinson after this trial, she's going to want to get lost.
Get lost, everybody. For full story, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. We go way more into detail over there. Get lost.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.